we are a lazy business that doesn't listen enough to people.
I think there's a huge gap between what the industry thinks and actually the perception of the public.
We need to just be a bit braver. We need to stop sitting at a desk or in an office or places we feel comfortable. And we need to go and have proper conversations where the door is really open.
Hello and welcome to the EG Collaborators podcast. My name's Rhiannon Curry. I'm the Collaborators editor here at EG. I'm joined in the studio today by Virginia Blackman, principal at Avison Young, Martin Evans, creative director at UNI, Tim Lowe, managing director at Lowe Guardians, and Jason Hawthorne, who's the founding director at View City. Thanks everyone for joining me. Today's topic we're going to be having a think about is, does the property industry have an image problem? It's something that perhaps it's quite controversial. I'd love to hear your thoughts on sort of what you think the public perception of property is and perhaps how the industry can go about changing that. So first of all, what do you think are the biggest misconceptions that are levelled at the property industry at the moment? Martin, why don't you start? You're looking
I don't think there are an awful lot of misconceptions. I think that people have got their conceptions probably quite right. I think that our industry's got a lot to deal with right now. I think that I feel like our industry is generally out of step with things that people who live and work in the buildings that we build want and think about and care about. And I think that we are a lazy business that doesn't listen enough to people. And so I'm not surprised when people give us a hard time and complain about our approach to the world, because I think oftentimes they might be right.
Yeah, fine. And what sort of things do you think people think about the industry? What are some of those misconceptions
given that all of life happens in and around buildings? We born, we die, we get sick, we get healed, we sleep, eat, grow, learn. You'd think that people who made buildings would understand people, and I think that's fundamentally not so. I think that I've never heard the words market and research used together in a meeting ever in my entire career in our industry. And I think that it's because property has, you know, even in tough times, been a relatively easy business to make money in. And so I think there has been not an awful lot of need in our industry to listen to what people want. And I think times are changing. And I think it's beginning to get better, but I think it's time for us to start listening to what people want.
Yeah, Jason, you're nodding. Did you want to answer?
Absolutely. I mean, my background has been in consultation and essentially helping property developers through the sort of guise of understanding what the public reaction would be to the planning that they bring forward. And I agree with Martin. I think for the large extent, a lot of that has always been just part of process rather than actually truly listening. And I think if I reflect on probably some of the better cases of consultation where actually development has changed and been shaped by listening to the public, it's definitely worked for the better and created less conflict through the whole process of planning. So I would agree. I think there's a huge sort of gap between what the industry thinks and actually the perception of the public being able to look at the industry. And there's some fascinating papers around this at the moment. Tony Travers from London School of Economics has just written an excellent paper called Building Trust. And in that, it goes into a lot of depth about the fact that there just isn't trust between the in effect, who we're building for or hopefully building these buildings for and actually the developers that are behind them.
So do you think it is a fundamental trust problem that people have with the industry? Do you think that's where people's problems lie?
It's definitely a major factor, without a doubt. But that trust, I mean, I do actually believe it could be overcome. I think there are definitely things that we could do, sitting on the development side, if you like, that we could start to gain some of that trust. And there's also a lot of elements to the whole planning system that are just not visible. So, you know, the sort of payments through the Section 106 agreements and SIL payments, they're to the majority of people totally invisible. So a building's built and those payments are made, but actually what they're used for is never seen. So it's very difficult to understand that you know, as we're, you know, hearing from Martin, the sort of the money that goes in and the profits that are made, but actually we do need development. Development is material to us as a city growing and changing and developing. But I just think we need to understand why we're doing it and what benefits there can be derived from it.
I read a really interesting quote from Peter Rees, the former chief planner in the city. He said that there was a real shift a few years ago from the city being run by bankers to it being run by house builders, and how that would sort of changed and the sort of different, yeah, the different way that meant that money was circulating and what was considered valuable, I suppose.
I mean, definitely. And the city's, you know, is changing out of all proportion, isn't it? It was very much a base for finance, and now they're recognising they want a 24-hour economy, and they want people to live in the city, not just work in it. But interesting enough, of course, Peter is an interesting example. You know, most people recognise that the walkie-talkie was largely from his involvement and understanding that was, you know, a building that came forward, and we all know that's Marmite. So, you know, those levels of trust, I think, are also on a basis of, can we all understand and comment and understand what change would be? And clearly that's my background, that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, and Tim, I'll just come to you, that the industry that you're operating in has had a lot of bad press, and guardianship doesn't always sort of seem to work or be done particularly well. How are you sort of working to change those perceptions, maybe, or how much of that have you come up against?
So I think it's, from my perspective, it's quite interesting because we manage a really interesting group of people first and foremost. And just going back on your point in terms of their perception of the industry and development and the whole cycle which goes with it, it's really fascinating actually talking to our guardians, including myself in that bracket, because the misconception is that, you know, these are luxury developers coming in there. There is very little affordability going on there, and there is just no dialogue between the two parties. And it's just, I find it really fascinating actually just chatting with our tenants about their experiences and what their views of London and the city and where they want to go to. And I think one of the biggest issues we're facing at the moment, and I'm actually including myself in this, is that unless there is a dialogue and unless there is an understanding, you're just going to start losing people, including myself. You know, I'm getting priced out of London now, and I'm recently married, 31-year-old. And I think there is so much more the industry can be doing in terms of that dialogue piece, first and foremost, and the community element which goes with that. And that fundamentally is why we want to live in a city, first and foremost. In terms of my particular industry, it faces a lot of criticism for some of the unsatisfactory regulations in place to it, which we very much are fully against. But we allow this opportunity to reuse vacant space to provide affordable housing. And I think affordability is just one of the most important things for keeping the lifeblood of our economy ticking over. I find it fascinating finding what kind of different career paths our guardians living in our buildings do, and you know that the provision for that. So yeah
great. Virginia, did you want to sort of add to that, what kind of, I guess, what perception of the property industry? I've ditched the misconceptions now, because it just seems that we're agreeing that there are maybe some true perceptions.
I think there are some true perceptions, and I agree with colleagues here. We have been a bit lazy, and we've been silent, and we've sat in the background, and we've let things go on around us. I think probably the perception people have is that the property industry is rich. Everyone that works in it is rich. It's very white, and it's very kind of old school and kind of traditional. That's the perception, and very male as well. I'm getting mouthed at here. That's true. But I think that we are starting to see a little bit of change, and I think that's the kind of green shoots of hope. We are seeing in development, we are seeing developers, including some of the registered providers, who are out there being really quite collaborative and really interested in listening to people. But I think what's also interesting, if you look at the existing building stock and how that's being used, and the change that we have in things like the co-living, in some of the private rented sector residential, in some of the flexible office space, the WeWork style, you know, to use one example, that change from the public being a tenant who kind of owes a feudal kind of loyalty and will do as they're told by the landlord, towards being a customer who must constantly be consulted and listened to and flexed around if they're going to stay, is a really positive change. change, I think. We're probably in a period of change at the moment. Whether all of the existing ways of doing that works well, we're not sure yet, I don't think, because we're in this period of change. But we are seeing some, you know, some hope and some change there. And I think what we're also seeing in the younger generation is some really quite idealistic people coming into property, into regeneration, into prop tech, into all of these sort of smaller businesses. And that really does give, again, a bit of a kick to us all to listen and say, okay, some of these will work. Let's think about which ones will be the ones that do.
Yeah, Martin, that's sort of speaking to your point about people, isn't it? And knowing, yeah, knowing about people.
And I think, having been a bit down about our industry, it's changing. And Virginia's absolutely right. And it's changing, I think, for two reasons. One, people's voices are getting louder. People in the community's voices are getting louder. And that's because people are taking up the concerns that they have. Estate regeneration, particularly in our cities, is causing a lot of debate. And people are becoming, using social media particularly, becoming a lot more organised. Terrible things like Grenfell are having causing a step change in the way that people are starting to realise they have to listen to people's concerns in large communities like that. But also it's changing, and this is when it really will change, when the money changes its mind. And in the residential development world that I spend a lot of time in, particularly, the money has been very fast. It's been fast in, develop, take its return, fast out, and on to the next investment opportunity. Particularly with the shift towards PRS and rental, that money is now long term. So it's in and it's staying. And the people who manage that money are suddenly realising, as Virginia pointed out, they need to worry and bother about the people who are living in the places that they own, because their returns are not coming from sales, they're coming from long-term rental streams. And so those people have to be happy, because if they're happy, they stay, they don't create voids or turnaround costs, they trade up when they get married and have kids, they might stay in the same brand, if you like, and move up. And so suddenly there is a whole, if you look in the job ad section in your magazine, there's a whole load of jobs being created of people in those pension funds and large investment companies, of people who understand how people want to live. And it's having direct impact on the design of buildings, on the places where the buildings are, on the complexity of development. So people want, funnily enough, shops and bars and amenities in their buildings. That's all a very good change. And when the money starts to change, that's when you know our business is really going to make a shift.
And where are the, sorry, we can stop.
I think one of the interesting things with that is that we are seeing the on-site property manager for both the commercial and the residential is a different animal. We used to have somebody who was probably came out of the handyman kind of style, being the property manager, but what we're seeing now are people being recruited for personality, for like customer service, for fix-it skills, for making people to organise social events, to organise all of those things. And that is this link towards, we move towards being people rather than technocrats. I think that's an interesting move, which, you know, I think we should be doing more.
And is that more of a shift to sort of a hospitality type approach, where you actually, it's a customer service play rather than a sort of maintenance?
Absolutely thing. So. Yeah. I mean, the maintenance is like a baseline that people expect everything to work. But on top of that, they are paying a premium. And as we are saying, they are paying and they'll stay long term, and they will pay their rent or charge on time. They will do all of those things which make them excellent, you know, tenants and excellent sources of income if we make this a place they want to be. So some of that is around, you know, the social values and some of the corporate social responsibility. Some of that is around what added value they have there. But those are all about a different type of person. We're probably recruiting people out of, as you say, hospitality or customer service roles rather than out of pure sort of that sort of property management, facilities management role.
Yeah, and I suppose where you are changing areas where people have lived and worked historically, and there's maybe a bad press being given to the idea of gentrification and changing places, and where are the sweet spots in engaging with communities and making sure that you are getting what people want? There've obviously been those high profile examples where that's gone very wrong. We had that playground that was segregated, and sort of those bad examples that get picked up. But where do you engage with people? Is that about best design? Is it about better engagement? What's the sort of sweet spot?
I mean, certainly for me, it's at the moment is the engagement, an early engagement, so actually shaping places that people want to live in and want to be part of. I mean, Martin's point earlier, just the idea that, you know, we've seen this with probably most things in our life, from the sort of Netflix to Uber, that the fact that actually, you know, we're now seeing space as a service, which is changing all the thinking around how we expect to work, where we expect to work, what the conditions would be like, where we'll live, what that offers to us. But interestingly enough, I think we've still got such a psyche shift that we're going to need in the country as a whole in terms of the idea of ownership. So, you know, the next generation coming through are very quickly losing that idea of ownership. They don't have CDs, they don't have videos, they're quite happy to have all content on demand and not have ownership. As that starts to come through into space, I think that's, you know, and space by that I mean in places to live and places to work, we are seeing that. We're seeing the sort of big moves, the early moves from WeWork and others and collaborative spaces. I think that's just the starting point. I think everything's going to move in a way that we don't yet understand what that's going to be. But it's only going to work if we listen to the people that are going to use those spaces and we actually understand what their needs and requirements are. And there's some other massive factors here as well about getting this right, in that we already know our transport system literally cannot cope. I mean, we're 2 years behind now on opening of Crossrail. It was going to add 10% to the sort of capacity of the underground, and that will be like the M25 when it opened. It will be gone before it starts. So if we're actually going to be able to cope with the numbers that of people moving into London, we really have to start to be able to think about how you can live and work in the same spaces and understand those spaces, because we're not going to be able to shift people around in the way that we're trying to at the moment.
And is that about doing more consultation and better design stage, getting communities involved earlier? How does that actually play out, Martin? Do you want to talk to that?
I think the skill set that Jason is describing is planning. And of course, our planning expertise in our local authorities and in the GLA in London particularly has been gutted through austerity, or companies like mine taking the best of people out of the public sector and offering them greater salaries to come work in the private sector. That's where that expertise used to live, in how places are shaped. Because, you know, I'm the deputy chair of the London Festival of Architecture this year, and our theme is borders and boundaries. And we, as property developers, are so fixated on our red line boundaries. And of course, you have to be financially and legally, but in terms of moral responsibility, of course, we have to look over our fences and out at the places where we build and understand how our places connect with neighbouring places and the rest of the existing city. And so I think it's about looking for ways in which public and private sector can work better together. It's already starting to happen, because, again, these things change when the mechanism for making money and being successful commercially is interrupted by a bad system. And so I'm finding that there are much more productive conversations happening between private sector developers and planners in terms of how we resource better. Because, you know, when planning departments are gutted of resources, there's only one result for private sector developers. It means your planning takes longer and is more painful. And longer and painful means less money. So there's real impetus on both sides there to work together to work out how that process can happen. And so collaboration from public and private sector is really important and crucial, and happening better.
And do you think, Tim, maybe you can take this, but in terms of there being a sort of affordability element to workspaces and homes and, as you say, enabling people to stay in the centre and stay where they've always lived, do you think that that is a sort of fairly crucial part of that we're sort of enabling people to continue as they have been?
100%. I mean, just to kind of echo some of the comments earlier Jason made, you know, as I classify myself someone in the generation rent market, we're incredibly transient, sort of my generation, and the generations below are even quicker, in that spaces actually, you know, we don't require a huge amount of space. I have little possessions. I have a laptop, a phone, a couple of bags, and actually we're becoming even better at decluttering. My parents are awful, and their generation, you know, but whereas these days your possessions are an absolute minimum. So from my perspective, I would take being central located in a much smaller space. And I think discussing the kind of planning side of things as well, and this whole idea of planning standards and minimum space requirements, which in some areas, if you're a family, I agree with, but for someone like myself, I just want to have a bolt hole in a central location, which is convenient. I pay an upfront fee, all done and dusted, and that's where the market's going to. And I feel that this needs to be adopted by a much wider spectrum, that young people aren't living like my parents did. It's done, it's over, we're changing. And unless cities like London and the rest of the UK can adapt to that, you know, I look at a lot of the people leaving the buildings we're living into, and they're going to other countries because it's cheaper, or because they get a much better standard of living on that side. So, but I think it's hugely exciting. I think, you know, there is a lot of more businesses tapping into that and realising this is where the future is.
I would entirely agree. I think that we are looking at a huge change in approach, and unless we do some real listening without preconceptions, without the assumption that people want X or Y, without the assumption that they will need storage space, without the assumption they will need, you know, three bedrooms for a family house. Families might be, you know, two adults and one child now. Genuine listening, we are not going to get very far. And that does require us to do the process of consultation, but also requires us to have enough time. And people in my team and people in lots of other teams, we sit in people's sitting rooms and we don't make them come to the place where we want to talk. We go to where they want to talk and we go to where they're comfortable. We need to be really careful that we listen to individuals and the community rather than self-appointed community leaders. And we need to be prepared to have quite difficult conversations with people where we acknowledge they're going to be upset and we acknowledge that they are scared by change, and we acknowledge and we let them have all those feelings, and we don't walk away saying, "You're too angry, I can't talk to you." We say, "I understand why you're angry. Let's understand, let's get it all out, and then let's see if there's something we can do." So to have those tricky conversations, to have the conversations which say we can build 20 affordable spaces here, but they're going to be really small. What do we think? What do people think? Is it better to have 20 small spaces, 15 medium size, or 10 big? Which is it that which is most important? And actually, people understand that. When you're really brave and go and talk to them in a way they understand that. They know there's no magic pot of money. That we've all, you know, people do that. So I think we need to just be a bit braver. We need to stop sitting at a desk or in an office or places we feel comfortable, and we need to go and have proper conversations where the door is really open, rather than having a, you know, "I've got four questions for you on my consultation, all of which require you to say yes, you'd like my development." Because we've all seen those, and why wouldn't you do that when you know, you've got a really short amount of time to do it, and, you know, whatever. But if we're going to do this properly, we have to let people really talk.
And I guess that does improve that trust relationship, doesn't it? If you're being open with people at the start.
Yeah. And I think if you say, like I've said to people, "I know I'd be really pissed off if I was in your position." And I think you have to be human with people and say, "But if this is going to happen, what is your best outcome from it?"
But it's arrogance in the extreme, isn't it? To imagine that you're just going to go and present your scheme to somebody and say, "Do you like it or not?" And actually, if you don't like it, I don't actually care, because I've got enough money to fight you through appeal and fight you through JR and get to the end. And what I think we have to try to persuade our colleagues in our industry is that it's not just, I'm not just asking people to be nicer and better to people. I'm asking people to understand that if they are nicer and better and more consultative and more collaborative and more listening of people, they'll make better developments. And those better developments will be more valuable and everybody will win.
Yeah. And I mean, there is a lot of good being done. I feel like we've been sort of slightly negative about things that maybe are not being done so well, but there is plenty that's going on that's really good. So how can the industry be better at shouting about those things and actually saying we've really affected change here?
I do think we need to be brave, and I think we need to use and social media is kind of, I'm not saying I'm brilliant at this because I'm not, but I think we need to stop being property people and start being PR and storytelling and shouting about what we do in words people understand. And I think when I was at MIPIM, I talked about nobody really cares outside the property industry, whether it was a £500 million deal or not, but people might care if we can say that this means there's housing for your children, and this means you with your really bad respiratory problems are now going to be in a house that is warm and dry, and you know there'll be a new primary school that actually functions and is not falling apart. These are the things we need to go and talk about. These are the things people care about. And let's be brave. Let's not let the protest groups take over social media. Let's be, you know, let's go out there and tell that story. Understand they might be upset. Understand there's concerns about it. But be prepared to stand behind the good things that we actually do.
Yeah, it's interesting how WeWork has slowly changed the way that, and others have changed the way we think about offices, hasn't it? And I feel like that was very negative when it began. But actually gets sort of lots of positive pickup now. Do you think guardianship might go that way? Do you think we're sort of negative now, but might
I was just going to say a quick following point from that. I think the narrative in property marketing is so bad. If you look at any new development and what it's wrapped around and the language they're using, and it's just so outdated, and it's just, some of these are just complete own goals, and it doesn't take much long to actually promote actually the positive to it, which is fundamentally the community. And that just seems to get ignored. And I think that's the one thing why protest groups, that's what they're crying out for.
But you know that marketing gets bad in a vacuum. It gets bad when there isn't good enough stuff to say. And we've got to do, not say. And then the saying is really easy. And every point that Virginia makes about how you then can truly pick up all that stuff and communicate it properly and be... you know, almost aggressively positive and be proud of what you do if you do it well.
There's some real challenges here, though, in terms of, I think it's, we can look at what's developed, and it's very easy to look at buildings that were built 30, 40, 50 years ago and presume that, that change should be the route forward. And I remember two very pertinent interviews that I did with two ladies, one who lived in Kidbrook before the regeneration there, and one who lived on the Aylesbury estate. And they were both rehoused in beautiful new apartments, and as Virginia said, you know, warm and you know, cosy, lovely apartments from what they had. And when I spoke to them about, you know, was it a nice change and was their apartment better? Both of them said, yeah, but when I moved into the property I moved into, it was amazing. The space was incredible. Kidbrook, we had routes across. There were like walkways in the sky, she described it as, where we could walk to our neighbours and have coffee. By the time she left there, it was literally a den of iniquity. And the Aylesbury, she said it was fine, but I had a three-bedroom apartment. I raised my entire family in that apartment, and it was amazing. And the sort of social network she had was fantastic. And I think we're in danger as well of repeating the same issues and same problems because we're not listening. We're not listening hard enough, and we're not listening, you know, with enough attention and thought to what change looks like. But conflict into that then, of course, is we know we need to create more houses, and therefore we know we need more density, but then planning is set against density, which in its own right is, you know, there's so many issues and challenges around here that it's only going to work if we all start to debate this and start to talk about it. And that's very much where I come from. That was the conception for what we're trying to do at the moment, which is to be able to at least visualise and understand what the change looks like. And I think we haven't mentioned it yet, but my background is technology. I think that's where it plays a huge part in this, and that we start to be able to reach wider audiences and understand what change looks like and spread the, you know, the consultation net, if you like. Let's get more people engaged and involved in this.
Yeah, and what is the pinnacle of all this? What is the ideal? What do you want the public at large to think about the property industry?
That we create places that make their lives better. That's what we are here to do. We're here to build places for communities to thrive, people to live, to study, to enjoy themselves, to work. There's no other reason to be building property other than to service communities, whatever they are.
I think we would also want people to understand that we want to be in conversation with them about this, that this is not that we need to move to a situation where, and this is what we should be aiming for, is that this is a conversation and a discussion about what the physical structure of the place they want to be looks like. Because that's all we're doing, is we're doing physical structure that delivers a place. And so as long as we're clear that it's about the place and the community, and whether that's a business or a residential or whatever it is, or the combined, that's good. But we need to move towards that. And I think if we can get to a point where people are in conversation with normal people who happen to work in property, then I think we're in a good place.
Yeah, and I suppose, as you said at the start, changing the mix of people who are working in property, yep, might actually go a long way to doing that.
Yeah, and that's about all the things I talked about, you know, whether everyone's old and rich and white and male, etc. But it's also about what skills are we bringing into this? Because we've historically brought in technically skilled people, and we still absolutely need technically skilled people, but maybe we ought to be at the universities that are doing creative arts and are doing you know, media and PR and marketing and art and theatre, and getting those skills into this, because that's how you engage people and get a conversation going.
Thanks so much, everyone. You can read more about collaborators on egi.co.uk.